So, the real estate contract is a written document that outlines the terms of the deal that you're making with the other party or parties involved in your real estate transaction. Although the entire contract covering the transaction can be handwritten, the large number of items that are covered in the agreement dictates that most contracts these days are pre-printed. Unfortunately, most of the pre-printed portions of a standard real estate contract, which are known as boilerplate, by the way, are written to protect the seller rather than the purchaser. To help you, whether you're buying or selling, I've included two different real estate contracts in the Real Estate Forms portfolio. The real estate purchase contract, to be used by you when you buy a property, and the real estate sales contract, to be used by you when you sell a property. Both contracts follow the same outline and paragraph numbering, but I've designed the wording of each one to benefit you, whether you're buying or selling. Many times, specific agreements between the buyer and the seller are not covered in the boilerplate of the pre-printed contract. When this happens, or when a buyer or seller finds it necessary to expand on the boilerplate information, one or both parties must add extra clauses or agreements to the contract. Now, these clauses could literally be handwritten in the margins of the pre-printed contract, but this is not a very professional way to conduct business. Typically, such extra items or agreements are included on a separate page known as an addendum, or sometimes known as a rider. The addendum is dated and the names of the seller and purchaser are added, as well as the date of the contract that the addendum is a part of. All of the details that are too numerous to spell out in the contract and all the essential and non-essential contingencies are placed in the addendum. The contracts included in the Real Estate Forms portfolio are legal in all 50 states. If you end up working with a broker who is adamant about not using them, don't worry. Just go ahead and let the broker use his or her own contract, but make certain that whatever portion of my pre-printed contract that you wish to use is included in the broker's contract as part of the addendum. Now, you can use the real estate purchase contract in connection with the purchase of a single-family home, a mobile home, a multi-unit property, a commercial property, or even vacant land. I've titled it a real estate purchase contract, but you should be aware that in various parts of the country, it's also known as an offer to purchase, a purchase sales agreement, or an escrow agreement. When you're initially making your offer to a seller, either directly or through a broker, always keep a copy of the offer for yourself. Later, when the seller has accepted the offer or you have accepted the seller's counteroffer, make three copies of the contract. Give the original to the title company or lawyer, and then distribute copies to the seller and broker if one's involved, and keep one for your own files. Notice that the very first line of the contract reads this way: when completed and signed by both parties, this is a legally binding contract. If this contract is not fully understood, the services of a competent professional should be sought. In other words, it's vital that you understand what a contract says before you sign it. That's why I want to describe some of the more important sections of the contract here in moderate detail. If you've got the No Down Payment Manual handy, feel free to open it and look over the example contract in the chapter titled Drawing Up the Contract. If you don't have access to the manual right now, simply listen along as I describe the various parts of the contract and then review the example in the manual at your earliest opportunity. Let's look at the section above paragraph 1. This section includes the names of the buyer and seller, as well as the property address and description. Note that if you're the buyer, you are protected by the words buyer's nominee. These words would allow you to assign the contract and would even allow you to sell the contract to someone else and make a profit before closing. Paragraph 1 of the contract is entitled Purchase Price. The Purchase Price section of the real estate contract describes in detail the terms and total purchase price for the property and includes 7 input lines. On line A, earnest deposit. You would show any cash or check or promissory note that you intend to give to a real estate broker or a seller. Generally, when I purchase property, I use a non-interest-bearing promissory note that becomes due and payable at the time the transaction is closed. Once the offer is accepted, a seller sometimes asks for this promissory note to be converted to cash. If I agree to that, I will note that on this line. Regardless, if I'm using a promissory note, the amount of that note is entered into the blank opposite the line next to earnest deposit, but is preceded by the words promissory note. Line B. Sum due after acceptance of the contract. That's where you would record any additional deposit that you would give after the acceptance of the contract. The amount varies. It could be zero, or it could be as much as 20% of the purchase price. The amount is open to negotiation, and is usually an amount that convinces the seller that you're a serious purchaser. It's to the buyer's advantage to place as little money in jeopardy as possible. The buyer does lose the use of this money while the contract is pending and could forfeit the deposit by failing to close on the transaction. Generally, I don't agree to pay an additional deposit. I try to keep my initial deposit to an amount under $1,000, and with no monies due after acceptance of the contract. In that case, the line would be left blank. Depending upon the size of the property you're buying, you may need to put down a deposit greater than $1,000. Brokers will often suggest that your deposit be at least 5% of the purchase price. However, this amount is totally negotiable, and I strongly recommend that you try to keep the amount to a minimum. On line C, proceeds of new note and mortgage from any lender other than the seller, you enter the amount of money that you're going to be receiving from any lender other than the seller. For example, enter the amount of money to be received from a bank or a private lender. On line D, existing mortgages on the property. Enter the amount of any mortgage that exists on the property that will remain after you purchase it. Even if you don't know the exact amount, enter an estimated figure. Line E, balance due seller by promissory note. This is where you note any money that the seller is, in effect, loaning to you to buy their property. Either a note or a note and mortgage evidences the loan. Line F, balance due seller by articles of agreement for warranty deed is where you insert the remaining balance of the purchase price amount that will be paid over time under the terms of the agreement. You can use this real estate purchase contract to buy property not only when the deed is transferred to you in the immediate future, but also if you buy property under an agreement for deed, also known as an article of agreement, land contract, or an installment contract. A separate form is not necessary. If you do choose to use this form to purchase a property under an agreement for deed, you should record this real estate purchase contract or an affidavit and memorandum of agreement, which means in either case that the seller's signature must be notarized. Line G. Additional sum due at closing is where you enter the balance of the cash due to the seller at closing. The total purchase price section is where you add all the numbers that you've entered in lines A through G and enter the total purchase price you are paying for the property on this line. In paragraph 2 of the contract, apportionment of the purchase price indeed, you can break down the amount that you're paying for the land, the building, the improvements, and any personal property. Depending on the age and condition, I will generally attribute approximately $1,500 to $2,000 of the purchase price for personal property. The apportionment of the purchase price can greatly assist you in maximizing your depreciation write-offs for the property. The type of deed to be given by the seller is also noted. Usually, it's a general warranty deed or a general stamped warranty deed if there are transfer taxes due. In paragraph 3, the buyer's expense section, you note any expenses that you are paying in connection with the purchase. Now, usually, I don't agree to pay for anything other than the items mentioned in this section. Needless to say, at the time you submit the contract, you should try to get the seller to pay for as many of these items as possible by putting a check mark in the box that precedes each item. Let me talk about a few of them briefly. The title commitment is a commitment for title insurance. Never buy a piece of property unless you obtain title insurance, and have the seller pay for it, or at least try to. The seller usually pays for the insurance policy that covers the buyer. It is customary for the buyer to pay for the policy that covers his lender, as well as a fee for the title company for dispersing loan proceeds and processing the closing documents. A current survey should be obtained prior to closing. In many instances, title companies will ensure that the parcel is free of encroachments. However, it's best to have a survey in hand at closing. Many standard contracts will stipulate that the seller will provide a survey that is less than 6 months old. Review the contract to make sure this provision is included. The attorney fees are for fees paid to attorneys that work on the closing. Both parties usually pay their own attorney fees. The appraisal fee is generally not required unless bank financing is being obtained. This cost is normally a buyer's charge that is likely paid before the closing. The seller usually pays the real estate commission due on the transaction. An abstract of title is not required if you're obtaining title insurance. Remember, insurance is preferable to an abstract of title. Also, a title opinion letter is not required if you're obtaining title insurance. FHA VA mortgage discount. That refers to the discounts that are due in the form of points, where 1 point equals 1% of the loan amount, if new FHA or VA financing is being obtained. Usually, this is a loan charge paid by the buyer, although the seller can assume responsibility to pay this charge. Photographs are not usually required. The satisfaction of mortgage and recording fee applies if there is an existing mortgage on the property that will be paid off, in which case the seller is responsible for making certain that a satisfaction of mortgage is recorded in the public records. I always check the home inspection item, although it is usually paid for by the buyer. Nonetheless, asking for a home inspection could assist you in your negotiations because you can use the home inspection as a giveaway item. This is a good example of what we call a non-essential contingency. Repairs or replacements required by FHA or VA are necessary only if you're obtaining FHA or VA financing. If not, there may still be other repairs needed, so you could go to the next item, which happens to be a blank. Put a check mark next to it and write this: repairs or replacements per attached addendum. The seller is usually obligated to pay for repairs up to a set amount. If he refuses to make repairs beyond the set amount, the buyer has the option to withdraw from the contract or take on the responsibility to make the repairs. Any other inspections required by law? Accounts for the fact that many municipalities have various occupancy requirements when a property changes hands. Let's look at the next paragraph, attorney review. That's a section of my real estate purchase contract that affords both parties the opportunity to have the contract reviewed and accepted by their respective attorneys prior to being bound by the contract. Purchase price, closing date, and possession date are terms that are not open to attorney review. In the next paragraph, prorated items. It states that any changes, assessments, or expenses of any kind are to be prorated as of the date of close. If the closing takes place on January 31, the seller is responsible for 1/12 of all the costs of ownership of the property for that year. This paragraph also stipulates that all escrow balances, that is the amount of money held by a third party for the payment of taxes and insurance, become the property of the buyer. Even if there is an overage in the account, that is more than enough needed to pay for expenses to the date of close, the buyer would still receive the entire balance. This example illustrates that this is truly a buyer's contract. The next paragraph, title and title insurance. Normally, I give the seller 30 days after acceptance of the date of the contract to deliver a title commitment for an owner's title policy to me or my attorney. If I have a particular title company that I prefer doing business with, I actually write in the name of the title company as part of that paragraph. Okay, look at the paragraph titled survey. This applies if the seller is obligated to provide a survey. I generally allow 30 days from the acceptance date of the contract for this task to be performed. Generally, a spotted survey is required, which shows the boundaries of the property and the location of all the improvements on the property. If no survey is required, then check the No Survey is Required box. Look at the paragraph Examination of Title and Time of Closing. This directs that the closing will take place at the office of the buyer's attorney. Now, if you don't have an attorney and you're using a title company, cross off buyer's attorney and put in the name of your title company. There are boxes you can check and then enter the exact date you wish the closing to take place. And if you're getting a new mortgage, check the next box and you might enter a date of 30 days after mortgage approval that you want the closing to take place. If you're trying to get the property rented before closing, you should put in the words "see addendum" instead of an exact date. Then in the addendum, note that the closing will take place when a tenant has been located, or specify a closing no later than a certain date. The paragraph, default by buyer, provides that if you default on the contract, that is, you fail to perform according to the terms of this agreement, the seller's sole recourse against you will be the earnest deposit amount shown in the initial deposit paragraph. While I've never failed to go through with any real estate transaction for which I've contracted, it is possible that a change in financial circumstances or death or divorce could trigger a default. This paragraph limits your liability or that of your estate to the earnest money deposit paid. Look at the paragraph default by seller. It provides that if the seller fails to perform, you may ask for a return of your deposit or, if you choose, bring a suit in court against the seller for specific performance. In other words, by filing a lawsuit, you could ask the court to force the seller to sell to you. Look at the paragraph performance, default, release of earnest deposit. This gives specific instructions for handling of the earnest deposit. The section allows the parties to the contract to select an unbiased third party to hold the earnest deposits until closing. This section provides additional protection to the buyer against the loss of earnest money due to seller dishonesty. Look at the paragraph condominium provision. States that the seller must provide evidence from the condominium association that it is okay for the seller to sell the property. The condominium association must waive in writing any rights of first refusal or other rights or financial claims that it has against the unit. Look at the paragraph on condition of the property. The seller agrees to deliver the property to the buyer in the condition as it was at the time the contract was signed. It further warrants that the seller knows of no defects in the property. Now, some states put the burden on the buyer to determine whether there are any defects in the property. Other states have statutes that require written disclosure by the seller of any known defects. I strongly recommend that you request a disclosure report from the seller prior to submitting an offer. If the seller is represented by a real estate broker, it is very likely that his report will be readily available. If not, you may have to get the disclosure form used in your state and have the seller complete it. If there are any defects in the property, whether disclosed by the seller or determined by the buyer, the seller has the responsibility to repair such defects up to a cost of 5% of the total purchase price. If the seller does not make the repairs, the buyer may elect to take the property as is and deduct 5% from the purchase price as shown in the contract, or terminate the contract and receive a refund of all deposits. In the last sentence, the seller agrees to remove all debris from the property by the date of possession. Since the word debris is somewhat nonspecific, I usually add, and leave the property in a broom-swept condition. The property inspection contingency paragraph provides that the buyer's obligation to proceed with the purchase is contingent on receiving a satisfactory inspection report from a certified property inspector. If the report is not satisfactory and the appropriate notice is given to the seller, the buyer can request the repair of the item in disrepair, and the seller may either fix those items or release the buyer from the contract. Don't overlook this opportunity to have a property professionally inspected. Through the use of referrals, find an inspector who is extremely thorough. This is your opportunity to have all significant defects corrected by the seller at the seller's expense. Otherwise, you will eventually be making these very repairs yourself at your own expense in the future. After the seller has made all the repairs and corrections, you should either inspect the repairs yourself or have the same professional inspectors return to make sure all the repairs have been done correctly. Let's look at the paragraph concerning seller government notice certification. This confirms to the buyer that there are no code violations or governmental actions known to the seller. This section is an important disclosure because municipal violations do not always show up in the title report. Let's look at the next paragraph, occupancy, which lists the names of the tenants, if any, and if there are no tenants, put the words not applicable. Note that this paragraph says that all leases are subject to the buyer's approval. And look at the next sentence. It's very important. It requires that all of the income and expense data that the seller provided to you must be complete and accurate, all of which must be acceptable to the buyer. Now, if you have previously obtained income and expense data from the seller, which I will add parenthetically, you should have, you can and should compare this data with the actual records and bills to make sure that it is completely accurate. I can tell you that sellers usually understate their expenses and they overstate their income. So this provides you with an opportunity to either void the contract or renegotiate the terms if you choose. The next paragraph, mortgage or third-party financing. This paragraph states that you are seeking outside financing, and if you're not able to obtain the financing on terms that are acceptable to you, you can ask for a return of your deposit. No specific interest rate or terms are mentioned, only the terms acceptable to the buyer. Again, very favorable wording for the buyer. Look at the paragraph seller financing. This is one of the most buyer-oriented clauses in the entire contract, because in it, the seller agrees to subordinate his or her mortgage to another mortgage. If the seller is in first position at the time you buy the property and you later choose to go out and get bank financing, the bank assumes a first position because the seller has already agreed, through this contract, to subordinate and assume a second position. It also states that you can sell the property and let a new buyer assume the mortgage. It says that you can substitute other collateral for the mortgage, like another home or property in which you have the same or greater equity. It says that you will have no personal liability under the terms of the mortgage. It states that you will have a term of 30 days, instead of the normal 15 days, to cure a delinquency that you may have on the mortgage. It states that you have a right of first refusal if the seller chooses to sell the mortgage at a discount. And it also states that you have a release clause that allows you to release a portion of the property from the mortgage by a proportional payment. This is used, by the way, primarily when you're talking about an adjoining lot or vacant land. There may be insufficient room in this paragraph to enumerate all of the terms and conditions of the mortgage that the seller is taking back. If that is the case, in the small space, write these words, see addendum for exact terms. All other conditions in this paragraph apply. This is truly a powerful buyer-oriented paragraph. The paragraph, Articles of Agreement for Warranty Deed. This form applies if you're making an offer to purchase property under the terms of an agreement for deed, land contract, installment contract, or a contract for deed. And remember, these terms all refer to the same method of purchasing property. In essence, you pay for the property, or a portion of it, before you receive a deed. All of the terms and conditions for seller financing as outlined in the previous paragraph apply. If you're trying to buy a property under these terms, do not check this paragraph. Look at the paragraph on FHA financing. That applies if you're going to seek FHA financing to purchase a property. If not, cross it out. Look at the paragraph on VA financing, and that applies if you're going to try to get a VA loan in conjunction with a purchase. Again, if you're not, cross it out. Both paragraphs concerning FHA and VA financing stipulate that if the buyer is unsuccessful in obtaining financing through FHA or VA, he or she has the right to complete the transaction using other alternative financing sources. Look at the paragraph on termite inspection. Whenever I buy property, I always require an inspection for termites or other wood-destroying organisms. And as you will note in this paragraph, the seller agrees to pay for it. If there is any damage, the seller is required to make repairs up to 3% of the total sales price. If repairs exceed that amount, the buyer still has the right to buy the property, and in lieu of the repairs being made, deduct 3% from the price as shown in the contract. Look at the paragraph on zoning, and this is important for income property because in it the seller is warranting that the property is zoned for rental use. If you're purchasing a single-family home, put in the words, single-family residential rental. If you're buying a two-unit or a three-unit property, it's important that you put in two-unit residential rental or three-unit residential rental. Look at the paragraph on legal use. In this paragraph, the seller warrants that no building code or other violations exist for this property. And in the paragraph on local ordinances, stipulates that if required, the seller provides and pays for any certificates to show compliance with local ordinances. Look at the personal property paragraph. The personal property included in the purchase price lists a variety of personal property items that may or may not be included with the property. Go through the list, and if the items are not included, strike a line through them. If they are included, leave them as shown. If the list of personal property items is quite extensive and is greater than the items shown in the paragraph, you should spell out all of the personal property items in the addendum. In that case, write in the words, see addendum for exact list. All items of personal property should be on a separate bill of sale. The deed does not transfer personal property. In the paragraph, time for acceptance, enter the time during which the seller may accept the offer. Now, generally, I do not give the seller more than 24 hours to accept an offer. If I'm presenting an offer in the morning, I will frequently only give the seller until 6 p.m. of that day to accept the offer. Why? Because I don't want the owner or broker shopping my offer in order to get a higher offer from someone else. As I mentioned earlier, an offer may be withdrawn any time before acceptance. If it's not withdrawn and the seller does not accept it before the time stipulated on this line, the offer is automatically terminated. Look at the paragraph, Additional Terms and Conditions. This states that this contract shall survive the closing. This is important to the buyer because the seller has made a lot of warranties to the buyer within the contract. In subsection E, there is a space preceded by the words other. If this space is adequate to enter all of the agreements between you and the seller, then an addendum is not needed. Generally, there's not enough room here, so most contracts do include an addendum. and the paragraph regarding the real estate sales commission. It notes that the real estate commission, if any, is paid by the seller. If the buyer is paying the commission, it's included in the addendum. If there's no real estate commission due, this section is crossed out. Note the phrase, time is of the essence of this agreement. Now, this sentence states that all duties and obligations discussed in the contract must be completed by the date stipulated, or the person not fulfilling his or her duties and responsibilities is in default. In other words, 1 minute late is too late. Because of this sentence, if either party tried to contest performance that extended beyond the dates in the contract, very few judges or juries would rule in their favor. Time is of the essence. It is not discretionary. Look at the buyer's signature section. When you have filled out the contract in its entirety, sign the offer, date it, and put in your address. You should even add your telephone number, because if the seller refuses your offer, they have your address and telephone number and can contact you at a later date. I've had a seller contact me as late as 6 months after my original offer, and I ended up buying the property. And finally, the seller's signature section. If the seller accepts your offer as presented, the seller signs the contract and puts in the date of acceptance. If the seller wants to change any of the terms of the contract, he or she would still sign the contract, date it, and where changes are needed, make those changes right where they occur. For example, if the seller does not accept your purchase price but rather wants a higher figure, the seller puts in that figure next to your total purchase price and initials it. If you later agree to accept the seller's counteroffer, you put your initials next to their initials to show your acceptance. Please refer to the manual for a detailed example on how to use my real estate purchase contract.